ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Respectful obeisances to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and to all of you, you are Vaishnavas and the most worshipful in all the universe. Hare Krishna. In the journey in spiritual life, or in any journey, but since we're embarking on the greatest of all journeys, that is, going back home, back to Godhead, it's useful to talk about failure. You all like to talk about failure, right? Say yes. Thank you. So because failure is a pillar to success, and Prabhupada writes about this, as I mentioned last evening, in the light of the Bhagavat. And Swami Prabhupada knows exactly where that is. Okay, it's not, plate number 45, I believe. One day when I was staying at Govardhan Hill with Tushta Prabhu and Parma Karuna were there. We go every year and stay at Govardhan, Krishna willing. And at that time we were staying up on the roof. And I remember we were just there to hear in channel day, so one day I walked out on the roof and I saw Parma Karuna and Tushta Krishna Prabhu as if it was like they had found a vein of gold or something like that at a mountain somewhere. And they were motioning to me to come over. It was kind of like urgent. So I came over and Tushta said, "I think we found something." And they read me this purport from the light of the Bhagavad, and indeed they did. They found perhaps one of the most encouraging of Prabhupada's commentaries in the in all of his books. And within this passage, which describes how in the autumn season, this is a section of the Srimad Bhagavatam describing autumn. So it says it's a mating time. And during that time, when the females become pregnant, then it's comparing that to the seed of bhakti. And once the seed is there, then it's going to grow and fructify. So, he writes, "Devotional service to the Lord never goes in vain. Just at the right moment, the result of one's particular devotional service will come, even if one has no desire for it." I'll let that sink in for a minute. "The pure devotees do not wish any return from the Lord in exchange for their service. They do not make business exchanges with the Lord. But the Lord, out of his own accord, fulfills all the desires of the devotees. It may appear that a devotee of the Lord is becoming poorer and poorer in terms of material prosperity, but factually he is not. The typical example is the Pandavas. The five brothers headed by King Yudhishthira underwent all sorts of difficulties because of the conspiracy of their cousins, headed by Duryodhana. But in the long run, King Yudhishthira was enthroned by Lord Sri Krishna and his enemies were vanquished. King Yudhishthira was never disturbed by all the calamities that overcame them, even though Lord Krishna was ever their companion. The Pandavas never prayed to the Lord for anything but his devotional service. In due time, everything came out in favor of the devotees. A devotee, therefore, should execute his devotional services with full energy, endurance, and confidence. He should perform his scheduled duties, he should be pure in heart, and he should serve in association with devotees. All six of these items will lead the devotee to the path of success. One should not be discouraged in the discharge of devotional service. Failures may not be detrimental. They may be the pillars of success. One must have good faith in the regulative principles followed by their self-realized souls, and one should not be doubtful about the ultimate result of such service. Rather, one must go on executing his prescribed duties without hesitation, and one should never be influenced by unwanted association. We should not consider going back to God as a plaything. We must take it seriously, as enjoined in the scriptures. For a strict follower, the result is sure and certain, and when the time is right, the result will come of its own force. Dhruv Maharaj went to worship God to gain something, but when he actually came in contact with God, he did not want anything from the Lord. The Lord, however, awarded Dhruv Maharaj both benefits. That is, the Lord fulfilled his desires and also gave him eternal salvation. Such are the lessons we learn from all the revealed scriptures. The Almighty God awards the results we desire, and therefore we should desire that which is eternal, blissful, and full of knowledge. In devotional service, we should not endeavor for that which is temporary and useless. So what did you hear so far?
Yes. Going back to God has not a plaything.
It's not a plaything. One must take it seriously. Yes, what else?
Even if there's failures in devotional service, we shouldn't be discouraged.
Yeah, they may become pillars to success. Failure is as the pillar to success. Another?
The results of our endeavors, they come forcefully.
They come with their own force. At the right time, it will come by its own force. So you just have to be diligent and continue your service and have faith in the process. Just as the farmer has faith in good seeds and knows it did everything needed to cultivate the land, put the seeds in, water them, you just have to wait. It comes of its own force.
Devotional service is not conditional bargaining with the Lord. It's giving unconditionally. And whatever results happen often are good, but they're unexpected.
Nice point. And there's a sense throughout this purport that one shouldn't cheat oneself by asking for something inferior. In fact, in the last paragraph probably says one should ask for that which is blissful and eternal. Why ask for further encumbrance in the material world by asking for anything less than that? Thank you. Yeah, more from this side. What did you hear so far? Any one thing that stuck in your mind? Yes.
But even if we don't think that we desire to be a devotee, that we do and will realize that desire within us?
Yeah. We may not have a clear idea about our relationship with Krishna, but if we continue in the process, Krishna will help reveal everything to us. Thank you. Anything else? Okay, so I'm going to expand a little bit on the theme of failure as the pillar to success, because it's a good mantra to keep with one, because so-called failure is inevitable in practicing any discipline. And to begin with, here's a quote from the person who founded the first volunteer fire department. You know who that is? For 500 points. Benjamin Franklin. He said, "An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure." So it means that if you take caution on the front part, and that's befitting for somebody starting going back to God as a plaything, one should be careful. And one should also beware of Maya, because she's very subtle in the way that she presents to each individual person a particular package that is designed to entice that particular person. And it's not that there's a huge announcement. She doesn't make a huge announcement and say, "I'm Maya, and I'm here to take you away from devotional service." But as we'll discuss in a few minutes, she sneaks in. But because each individual person has a particular set of desires, she can be very expert in presenting the objects of those desires in such a way that the mind may become bewildered, so one has to become fortified. So Srila Prabhupada said once to his disciples that you're not sufficiently afraid of Maya. And we find that great devotees like Prahlad Maharaj, in his prayers to Lord Nrsimhadev in the 7th canto, 9th chapter, says, "My dear Lord Nrsimhadev, everyone's afraid of you." And he mentions how there are elephants running away all over the universe when they hear the roaring of Lord Nrsimhadev, and also the demigods themselves were frightened. Even Lakshmi Devi was afraid. She wasn't sure who this was. She'd never seen her husband like this before. He was so angry, and in this unique form of Lord Nrsimhadev. And then Prahlad, when he was pushed forward by Brahma, all the demigods offered prayers, and they didn't pacify Lord Nrsimhadev at all. So Prabhupada said, it's like pushing a 5-year-old boy into the cage of a lion. Brahma said, you try. He came for you. So Prahlad began to offer prayers. And in his prayers, he says, everyone's afraid of you, but I'm not afraid of you. I'm afraid of your Maya. I'm afraid that I'll slip and get caught and pulled down into the gears again. And he describes how the material world is a crushing process. Nishpijamanam upukarsha vibho prapannam. He says that the Maya, it's like a huge wheel or set of wheels that are grinding everybody up. So he doesn't want to fall into that Vishnu Maya again. So he's very wary of that and said, that's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid of your Vishnu Maya. So one should carry some healthy sense of fear that the material world is stronger than I might expect. Oftentimes people go to the ocean and there are signs up that say, undertow, beware. And they go in anyway and they think, it's the beach. And then they get swept out to sea and drowned by the undertow. And people often too, we see along the California coast, honeymooners, they'll go up to the beautiful peaks above the ocean and stand there and look out and think how great life is. And then there's sleeper waves that come. There are signs warning people about this, but sleeper waves means that there's an inordinately large wave that suddenly comes out of nowhere and then pulls people off the cliffs and into the ocean. So one should be a little careful wherever one goes in the material world and be wary that sleeper waves can come at any time, that there's an undertow here, and not tempt Maya. So in 765, Srila Prabhupada writes, this is a regulative principle. One should not fall from his exalted position. This is a regulative principle. One should not fall from his exalted position. So the soul really is an exalted personality. We're part and parcel of Krishna. We have the same quality as Krishna, but due to misuse of independence, we've come under the sway of Maya. And in the material world, the three gunas are the controlling factors, these modalities. If one is affected by the mode of goodness and he goes upward, urdhvam gacchati sattvasta madhyam tishtanti madhava jaganya guna vrittista adoga chanti tamasa. So Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita the way we get moved around by these modes. In the mode of goodness, if you're touching the mode of goodness, then you go upward, urdhvam gacchati. And if you're meddling with the mode of passion, then you stay in middle regions. And then he says that if you touch the abominable mode of ignorance, then you're pulled downwards. Then again, in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad world, at any time it can be toppled, and will be. So one should write, first of all, this is from 765, did I say? Therefore, while in the material existence, bhavan ashrita, a person fully competent to distinguish right from wrong, must endeavor to achieve the highest goal of life as long as the body is stout and strong and not embarrassed by dwindling. So as soon as you have an inkling that spiritual life is important, you should use your energy as much as possible to advance spiritually, because at some point the body will dwindle. Purport, as stated by Prahlad Maharaj at the beginning of this chapter, Kumara Acharit Prajna's energy and valuable human lifetime simply working like a cat or dog to develop his economic condition. For one word in this verse, there are two readings, Bhavam Ashrita and Bhayam Ashrita, but accepting the meaning of either of them will bring one to the same conclusion. Bhayam Ashrita indicates that the materialistic way of life is always fearful because at every step there is danger. Materialistic life is full of anxieties and fear, bhayam. What's it full of? Fear, in Sanskrit called? Everyone say, bhayam. Okay. Similarly, accepting the reading, bhavam ashrita, the word bhavam, which word? Refers to unnecessary trouble and problems. So what does bhayam refer to?
Fear.
And what about bhavam? Huh? Unnecessary trouble and problems. We don't want that, right? So in the material world you get bhayam and bhavam. That's what's available. Fear and unnecessary trouble and problems. Put into bhavam. Being perpetually embarrassed by birth, death, old age, and disease. Thus, one is surely full of anxieties. Human society should be divided into a social system of Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, but everyone can engage in devotional service. If one wants to live without devotional service, his status as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra certainly has no meaning. It is said, sthana drashta patantyada. Whether one is in a higher or lower division, one certainly falls down for want of Krishna consciousness. A sane man, therefore, is always fearful of falling from his position. This is a regulative principle. One should not fall from his exalted position. Again, a sane man, therefore, is always fearful of falling from his position. This is a regulative principle. One should not fall from his exalted position. The highest goal of life can be achieved as long as one's body is stout and strong. We should therefore live in such a way that we keep ourselves always healthy and strong in mind and intelligence so that we can distinguish the goal of life from a life full of problems. You want to hear it again? Say yes. Okay. The highest goal of life can be achieved as long as one's body is stout and strong. We should therefore live in such a way that we keep ourselves always healthy and strong in mind and intelligence so that we can distinguish the goal of life from a life full of problems. A thoughtful man must act in this way, learning to distinguish right from wrong and thus attain the goal of life. Thank you. I needed that. So, before I move on, let's hear what you heard from that purport. Tell me three things that you heard. Three people volunteered. Yes.
So, I think I didn't catch the last sentence. When you refer to healthy, it's not physical health. Is it more wisdom?
Physical health doesn't hurt. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yukta hara viharasya, yukta cheshasya karmasu, yukta swapna vabodasya, yoga bhavati dukaha. A yogi, in general, Krishna says, should maintain balance in life, healthy balance. Don't sleep too much, don't sleep too little. If you sleep too little, then you'll notice in your japa that you start falling asleep. Or when you're behind the wheel of a car, or when you're in Bhagavatam class, or anywhere else for that matter. And you shouldn't sleep too much either, otherwise you'll be dreaming all the time and you'll become bewildered. So in the eighth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Gajendra, the elephant, when he was being pulled into the water by the crocodile, Prabhupada mentions that the elephant is stronger than the crocodile except for in the water. In the water, crocodile wins. It's his natural place. So Prabhupada then gives this comment that everyone should live in a natural condition of life so that his or her senses are strong enough to fight with Maya. So you have to live a natural and balanced life. Your senses have to be strong, and as he says here, your intelligence has to be sharp. That requires a good diet, exercise, sleep, and things like that for you to use the apparatus that you've been given properly. Yes, 1, 2.
Well, I'm recalling the condition that most people are going between the gunas, which I recall as being tamas, raja, and sattva, I believe, and in that some people are more in the middle if they're associated with passion, and that's the rajas, I believe, and they have a chance to maintain some degree of spirituality, but if they indulge into the lower realm, I believe tamas, that there can be a big fall in consciousness that's much more difficult to get out of.
Yes.
And then that the efforts that people make are to transcend paya or fear and to avoid the condition of
Bhavam.
That is a constant dealing with problems and troubles.
Well done. Yeah. Just a comment about the nature of the modes and the kind of consciousness that they produce. It's not that they produce consciousness, but that our consciousness becomes affected in various ways by these modes. And the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Partiva dharana dumas tasmat agnis trayimayaha tamasas tu rajas tasmat sattvam yad brahmadarshanam. So it describes in a metaphor that the tamas is like the raw wood, and rajas is like smoke, but sattva is like fire. So fire is very useful. You can use it for Vedic sacrifice and for cooking for Krishna and so forth. Smoke, Prabhupada writes in his purport, smoke disturbs, but it rarely serves. And the raw wood means that one's in a helpless situation. As again, Krishna calls it the abominable mode of ignorance. Now, from rajas, one develops unlimited longings and desires for the material world in a sense that one wants to improve one's material condition. Therefore, in rajas, people are moving about trying to improve themselves in various ways. From sattva, the verse says, sattvam yad brahmadarshanam. From sattva, one can see the difference between matter and spirit. And in seeing that one is spiritual and not material, there's a natural sense of satisfaction, because we don't actually have to become something. We already are something. We're eternal. That's pretty good. That's better than pretty good. That's fantastic. And if someone's in sattva guna and can see that even a little bit, then there's a chance for spiritual life. From rajas, not so much. The Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam that from rajas, there's a slight inkling of the spiritual nature of the soul in the form of art and literature. And people go to museums, and they read great literature and so forth. And there's a sense that aesthetics are important in life. But all of those aesthetics are based around the material concept of life. They're still in rajas. But Prabhupada says they're an inkling of the nature of the soul that wants to see beauty and the free light of the spiritual world and so forth properly. Otherwise, and actually, he's always there. He's with us all the time. Tadejiti, tannaijiti, tadure, tadvantike, tarantarasya sarvasyas, taru sarvasyas. I can't see him because my vision is obscured because of the lower modes of nature. But from sattva-guna, we can have that vision. How to rise above the modes? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, mamchayo vyabhicharina bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samatityaitan brahmabhuyaya kolpate. If one goes on constantly performing devotional service, and constantly for those who are beginning devotional service means at least every day, don't skip a day, then one gradually rises above the three modes of material nature and comes to the spiritual level called Brahman. Thank you. One more. Yes.
I liked the analogy of the sleeper waves because you may think that you're in a spot that Maya can't get you and you're comfortable here, but it still can come and take you away.
Yes. That kind of thing really fascinated. When I saw, we were in a town called Mendocino on the coast, northern coast, California, and I went in some bookshop and they have little warning signs all over the place mentioning that people have been sucked into the ocean from that. And Bhagavatam has such stories. In fact, twice there's a story of the Kalinga birds told in the Bhagavatam. There's two Kalinga birds, and they fall in love, and they have a little family, and they make a little nest. And then they go off to get food for their family, and they come back, and one day the unthinkable happens. And as they see that their little babies are caught by a hunter's net. And so the female Kalinga bird then flies in to save the children, and she gets caught. And the male Kalinga bird, being so overwhelmed with grief, blacks out of what happens in the material world. Everything seems just fine. In fact, Prabhupada invokes this Bengali saying that I built this beautiful house for my happiness and enjoyment, and now it is burned to the ground. And Prabhupada said, this is an aphorism that describes the material world. End of story. Okay, so we have to be careful, because the sleeper waves will come and get us, can come and get us from any position, doesn't matter which. And therefore, as Thomas Jefferson once said, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. The price of liberty? Yes, say the whole thing. So how does that relate to the context of the story, of the narrative right now? Yeah, you do have to be aware of Maya, be vigilant, what's the other part? If you want to be free, go ahead, you tell.
You need to be ready when these things are about to happen, you need to be aware of them coming, not unaware.
Vigilant, yeah. Be vigilant. Somebody who has a dictionary? Anybody with a smartphone, raise your hand. Okay, please look up vigilant. See where it comes from? We want the etymology, please, if you can. But point is, liberty, a freedom to move about the universe or go beyond the universe, it comes at a cost. What is the cost? Exactly, eternal vigilance. You have to be eternally vigilant. As long as we're in a material body, we have to be vigilant that anything can happen. And that is the price that one must pay if you want liberty. That is freedom from the binding force of the three modes of material nature. Yes?
It says here in this etymology dictionary that from French, vigilance, from Latin, vigilantia, meaning wakefulness, from vigilia, see vigil.
Yes. So wakefulness. You have to be aware and awake. See vigil, please.
Etymologically, to take part in a vigil, you have to be alert and awake. The word comes via Old French, vigile, from Latin, vigilia, which was derived from the adjective vigil, awake, alert. So the notion underlying it is of staying awake to keep watch. Another derivative of the Latin adjective was vigilare, keep watch.
Vigilare.
Keep watch, which lies behind English reveille, surveillance, vigilant, and vigilante. Via Spanish. It came ultimately from the Indo-European base, wag, to be lively or active, which also produced English vigor, wake and watch.
Does that give an idea about what the ratio we should be? Yes.
I think we touched on an important point that we have to stay vigilant to watch for maybe sleeper waves or undertows that could come to get us as they're all around. But I think to do this requires even a higher awareness or being even more awake, and it's not just, you know, actively looking out for threats and danger and Maya, but it's even more staying focused and concentrated on Krishna to do that. Is there any other way?
Well, both are possible. By staying focused on Krishna, there's a natural way in which we're fortified. As the Bhagavatam says, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Priyojita Janaya Yashubhaira Gyam Gyanam Char Yadahaitukam. That by performing devotional service to Krishna, one naturally gets, as concomitants, knowledge and detachment. So it helps one to stay awake and also detached, so one doesn't get stuck again in the modes of material nature. At the same time, there are commonsensical ways in which, for instance, Rupa Goswami mentions that we should organize our life so that we stay free from the fetters of Maya. For instance, he talks about Atyahara, Brayashas, Prajalpun, Yamagraha. These are very common disciplines to don't overeat, he's talking about, and don't overcollect. He says that one shouldn't blabber all over the place just for no reason. Don't get caught up in just talking all kinds of nonsense. Be careful of how you speak. So these are other ways in which one can be vigilant as well. So both things can be there. And one should also arrange one's life, he said, so that one's always near the transcendental vibration. So if you have a choice, for instance, this is practical, if you have a choice, say you get a job and you can earn $200,000 and live far away from devotees and have bad association, or you earn $100,000 a year, both of them are okay, but then you're closer, they'll put you much closer to devotee association, you know that you'll be able to come and practice bhakti and so forth. Which one do you take? A, $200,000, or B, $100,000? Be 100,000? Okay, good. You pass the test. So if you make your choices according to what's most favorable for your devotional practice, then you'll never make a mistake. And even if you do, Krishna will make up for it. Yoga kshemam bahamyaham. If you organize your life in the way that you're always conscious of Krishna, one way or the other, then Krishna says, then I'll help you out. I'll make sure that everything works for you. Yes.
Is it helpful for, you know, people do therapy and other forms of personal growth that is about understanding your negative tendencies, and some go further in spiritual exploration, evaluating their karma. Some even have visions of past life karma, but is it helpful to get clear about what kind of Maya might come to you? You know, some people, that Maya might be associated with lust and passion, others it might be about overeating, and others it might be about, you know, lust for status and employment recognition and position in society. And so I've noticed, I happen to be a Vedic astrologer, so I work with people around seeing what their karma is. And as a way to antidote an awareness of what actually the kind of Maya that's going to be coming at you more readily based on your karma. Do you have any perspective on that, based on that?
Prabhupada, Prajuna Prabhu, ISKCON Pandit asked Prabhupada if Vedic astrology was within our siddhanta, that is, you know, should we introduce it in our practice? Prabhupada said no, but then he gave a caveat. He said, but if you know it's going to rain, you bring an umbrella. So, as far as finding out the peculiarities of one's, or the particularities, particular ways in which one's affected by the modes of material nature, can be helpful to a degree. However, there's also a way in which one has to be careful with many of the kinds of what we call self-help you mentioned in that genre, because there's also a way you can be victimized in that way too. And I've seen sometimes those who are practicing bhakti then start to take help from these kinds of perspectives, you know, self-help, and then they become more absorbed in that than in their bhakti. And they develop more faith in that process than in bhakti. And it's evidenced by saying, well, listen, you can't advance in bhakti unless you do this first. Which means that that begins to supersede the practice of bhakti. This is a kind of mixture that is, it's a mixed faith. However, in six cantos, Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole discussion is about how the direct process of bhakti, especially chanting the holy names of the Lord, burns to the very roots of the kinds of desires that we have accumulated over many lifetimes so that they don't sprout again. Whereas it's very it's mentioned there that by taking other kinds of help, even including, you know, in the Vedic context, of purifying oneself through fasting and doing all kinds of prayaschitta and things like that, then although one may be temporarily purified, those desire seeds sprout again and they come back. So the implication is that only the sprouting of Krishna bhakti within the heart can overcome those other anomalies that we've come in contact with from being in the material world. So back to the original point, to make it simpler, is that if we have access to these kinds of, this kind of information about, for instance, if you find out it's a better idea to point your head to the south when you're sleeping rather than just sleeping any which way, it could be valuable. It could be helpful. Just as much as any other, that's on a subtle level helping us, just as much as taking care of yourself through a good diet can also be beneficial for your overall practice of bhakti. You were going to make a...
just a follow-up question. When you're talking about bhakti practice addressing the roots, that's kind of what I'm getting to, in that are we referring to sanskars? What's termed as sanskars?
Yes, samskaras are, as you know, are impressions that exist within the subtle body of the living entity due to contact with the material nature in various ways over many lifetimes. But the original desire seed is that to disobey, to turn away from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's why I've several times, already twice, mentioned the verse Bhayam Dvitiya Abhinibeshitasya Ishadapetasya Viparya Yosmriti. The root cause of my involvement in the material world in the first place is an unwillingness to serve the Lord. It's irrational, but it's understandable in a certain way, because Krishna is a supreme Ishwar. He has complete independence, and we're a little stamp of him. We're a parcel. So we have similar tendencies. So we might look the wrong direction and think, I'm an enjoyer too, and try to enjoy and become captured by Maya. So the remedy ultimately is bhakti. By turning back towards Krishna and reestablishing one's relationship with him, a loving relationship, then the desire seeds from the material in the material world become ineffectual. And other kinds of arrangements for emancipation and liberation from the material world are mentioned as being short-lived. Srimad Bhagavatam takes this view, yene ravindaksha vimuktamaninas tvayasta bhavad avashudha buddhaya ariya krishna parambaram tata patantyato nadrita yushmanangraya. This was spoken by the demigods when they were praying toward Krishna, in the womb, when he was in the womb of Devaki, he was about to make his appearance. They knew he was there, so they were praying to him in the womb. And they say that the kinds of liberation one attains through one's own endeavor, without that don't include reestablishing one's loving relationship with the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, will be short-lived. One will slip from that kind of liberation eventually. One won't be able to sustain it. Furthermore, in the Madhurya Kadambini, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur catalogs the different stages at which one advances towards the prema, and he mentions the level of purity that one reaches at each stage. And until one is safely situated not only in prema, but seeing the Lord face to face, there's also still some residual effect of being in the material world left over. So we should do everything we can to organize ourselves and towards performing robust practice of devotional service. And if it includes some astrological help to help make us more serious. After all, when I look at my chart, I always see the same thing. There's ups and downs. What goes up must come down, and it'll come back up again. It's always a mixture of different things. But I personally have found it helpful in understanding trends. And, one of the main trends is that the material world is a very entangling place. Thank you for your excellent question. Very important. Anything else before I move on? I'll just move on. So, we talked about vigilance, and vigilance means keeping careful watch for possible danger or difficulties. So how does Maya sneak into our life anyway? One of the ways is that we leave the door open. And metaphorically, pride is, if I become prideful, for instance, I think my method of devotional service is better than everybody else's, and I'm an exalted personality and so forth, then this opens the door for Maya to slip in. And then laxity in practicing bhakti. When we visit every year when we're in Navadvip, the bhajan kutir of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj and Samadhi, we always mention that one of his teachings to his followers was that the way to go back to Godhead, to advance in devotional service, go back to Godhead, is to make sure that you complete your prescribed number of rounds every day, even at the risk of your own life. Just put that in at the end. He said it's the most important thing that you do every day. Take it very seriously. And don't become lax in your practice. Because the door opens with pride, and then when you become lax, that's what invites Maya to come in and say, okay, it's all right, you can hang out. I don't mind. Then, when she comes in and makes herself at home, justification is welcomes Maya to stay as a permanent resident. So as long as I justify all my laxity and the fact that I'm in Maya, and there's a lot of ways you could justify it, right? Yes? Like what? Yes, Chami Prash?
Changing the philosophy.
How do you mean that? Oh, change the philosophy.
Yeah, change the philosophy. I can't do this thing that everyone else seems to be. So maybe they're not doing it. Maybe no one's doing it. Maybe it's not doable.
Yeah, those Mangalarti going, 16-round chanting, who do they think they are anyway? Yeah, it's not possible. What other justification could you throw up? It's Kali Yuga. What do you expect? What else? It's fun, right? Yeah, what? It's only one day, 1 hour, just doing temporarily. I'll make a comeback later, something like that. That's the justification. Procrastination.
Saying to yourself, I'm not strong enough.
I'm not strong enough. It was kind of, Prabhupada mentions at the end of the 15th chapter of the Gita, the last paragraph, he said, to advance in devotional service, you must overcome weakness of heart. Weakness of heart means saying like, I can't do it, sorry. And also, blaming others. Is that possible?
Yes.
Blaming others? Who might one blame? You're so diplomatic. You don't want to name any specific entities. But it's possible someone could say, you know, they kicked me out or this or that. I mean, you hear it all the time. People say, you know, somebody else's fault. It's the circumstance's fault. It was, you don't know what I went through. This is justification. So if you justify, then what you're doing is allowing Maya to stay. It's like, hey, you just camp out. You stay here permanently. Make my home your home. So it's important to adjust the attitude. You've heard attitude is everything, right? Yes? Attitude is everything. So Srila Prabhupada writes in the preface to the Nectar of Instruction, advancement in Krishna consciousness depends on the attitude of the follower. So here's some risky attitudes. Dare I mention them?
Yes.
Thank you, Nagar. One risky attitude, I am advanced. Very risky. This is an attitude, I'm advanced. Next risky attitude, I am liberated. I'm liberated, therefore I can do what? Not follow all the principles, hang out with you know, whomever I wish, because I'm liberated. And this is very risky. Is this is exactly this kind of mentality, which is the opposite of what I'm going to name now, which are, oh wait, there's more. I can cut corners, risky attitude. I am independent, risky attitude. So here's how to lock the door on Maya by changing your attitude. Safe attitudes, I'm not liberated. Try saying it.
I'm never above chastisement.
I live to be corrected. Yeah. Here's a quotation from a writer who said, good advice is not often served in our favorite flavor. So be open to taking advice from others. Don't know everything already and be above chastisement. That's risky. Also, a safe attitude, remember where you came from. You may be in an elevated position now, and Prabhupada mentioned that he said when he took his followers to India for the first time, people were worshiping them. He said, that's because you're following the four regulative principles. He said, so don't think that it's that you're special. You're following in the footsteps of your spiritual master and the parampara. That's your qualification. Another safe attitude is everything belongs to Krishna. You can say that one. That solves a lot of problems. Another is, I am the servant's servant a million times removed. This is a quotation from one of Prabhupada's lecture. He said, you should think, I am the servant's servant a million times removed. You want to try that one? I'm the servant's servant a million times removed. I wear Trinadapisunichena as a garland around my neck. This is one of the topmost instructions given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and by Kaviraj Goswami. He said, you should wear that around your neck, meaning you should always cultivate that sense of humility. Then, how to fortify and protect from the attack. Your sadhana should be strict, serious, and sincere. What should it be? And Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavatam 4.24.25, keep your eyes trained to spot your offenses. So look and see, where am I making offenses? And make sure to rectify those as soon as possible. Some of the defenses to get a taste. Get a taste for chanting and get a taste for hearing in all its forms. And take shelter. Make sure that you have good shelter, especially in relationships with devotees, and be under proper guidance. So now we're really running out of time, so we'll take some last reflections. Anything that you heard that you found useful that you're taking with you? Yes.
An ounce of precaution? Prevention. Is equal to a pound of cure.
Exactly, yes. And who said it? Benjamin Franklin, the person who started the first volunteer fire department. So that is a very important point, is
it's much, one thing I've realized, it's much easier to stay in shape than it is to get in shape. That's another thing. It's really hard once you reach a certain point of inertia, it makes it much harder to come back up. Better to keep yourself going. And even if you feel that you can't do everything in devotional service, at least do what you can do regularly. Because even a small amount of devotional service performed regularly is very helpful for keeping one freed from the encumberment of the modes. What else? Never.
When you were talking, you really brought to the center focus that humility is really a central, you know, aspect of the practice of bhakti. And I was just thinking how it's not like, you know, we may think that, oh, that's just that devotee is very humble and that's very nice, and oh, this devotee is not humble, that's just his personality. I'm not very humble, but I am. It's actually so essential for the advancement in bhakti, and we all have to become humble at some point or another. So I was just appreciating how you're bringing it to the center, that importance of humility.
Thank you for the point. And as you know well, in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, Narada Muni mentions that dānya, or utter humility, is synonymous with prema. There is no advancement in devotional service without the ever-increasing presence of dānya, or utter humility. And in that section, Narada Muni mentions that one should practice humility in all the aspects of one's life. Like, for instance, is endearing about devotees is they're careful about bumping into people. Like, if you ever notice in an assembly of devotees, if a devotee bumps into someone, they'll turn around, stop, and then, excuse me, you know, like. This is kind of, on the opposite side, I saw two people walking in O'Hare Airport going the opposite direction, and they were, it was a little while ago, so they were carrying briefcases, kind of swinging, and then they clipped each other, because they were both not paying attention, and both of them turned around and started screaming expletives at each other, at one another. There's a sense that, you know, like, with devotees, they're careful about the way they interact with their environment, with everybody else, to stay in a humble position.
Natari Armarman.